welcome everyone to another edition of the Bus Stop Podcast. I'm Eric Westman, your host as usual for the podcast. And today, as we are in the final month of 2018 and rolling a little bit closer to Christmas, this means it is holiday travel season for Greyhound. And so one of the things we want to talk about today is security, making sure we have all of our customers and our employees safe and secure during this busy holiday travel season. So with me today is David Strife, our Director of Security. David, thank you for joining us today.
Appreciate it, Eric. Thank you.
I always like to let our listeners find out about who I'm talking to and their background here at Greyhound and even before that. So if you'll just give us a little background about your time here at Greyhound, how long you've been here, and where were you prior to Greyhound?
Oh, well, I started with Greyhound back in 2013. So that puts it about 5.5 years with Greyhound.
Time flies quickly.
It sure does. And, you know, part of my responsibilities with Greyhound is at the corporate or company organizational level, is looking at the security profiles within the organization, even down to the terminal level, and try to determine what security initiatives we need to develop in order to safeguard our passengers and our employees.
Okay, okay. Now, prior to Greyhound, where were you before that?
I was with two different types of law enforcement. I was I started my career after I got out of the Army. I'm also a U.S. Army veteran.
Okay.
I started with Davidson County Sheriff's Department in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
I was there for about almost 10 years, rose to the rank of captain, then I went to the federal level. Okay. So for the past 20 years, I ended up working with different agencies, Immigration Customs Enforcement, FBI, DEA, and most predominantly Fed Bureau of Prisons.
Okay. So you've dealt with security on, I guess you could say, all levels.
Correct. Everything from the private sector to local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and federal law enforcement.
So here at Greyhound, as we focus in on security here, and this is one of the busiest times of the year for us outside of the summer travel season. You know, we have people that will be traveling to see family and friends, and they're taking their bags and this, that, and the other. And we see everything that's going on in society today. So how is it a difficult job to keep the company secure and employees and customers secure?
Yes, it is, because it's the dynamics of the business. You know, we are a very, by nature, fluid operation.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on the season, depending on the day, depending on the hour, mm-hmm. you know, things change and things become, especially with security incidents and especially with the way the world is today, you know, with terrorism and,
right.
and active shooters and things of this nature, it's even added an increased level
okay.
that we have to be aware of, you know.
So do we have security guards? I know we do have security guards at locations. Do we have them at all of our locations, or is it just at, say, our major terminals like New York, L.A., Dallas?
Correct, Eric. Yes, we have guards and security officers in about 60 of our major terminals.
Okay.
But that also includes some of our larger and smaller agencies.
Really?
Yes. You know, not every agency has security. Not every mm-hmm. agency utilizes the Greyhound-mandated security. But 60 of our terminals, and they're major ones, like you said, New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta.
Okay.
Some as small as Tallahassee.
Really?
Yes. So we have those guards in place, and depending on the time of the day and what their schedules are and the type of incidents that we track over the past years,
mm-hmm.
we'll determine how many, you know, security officers will be in a terminal and how many hours they get.
Okay.
For example, you know, Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
it's got around 336 hours of security hours allotted to them. But, for example, Tallahassee only has 70.
Okay.
So it's smaller location, the different type of, and there's things that factor into that. Then we also have different types of security officers. We have some officers that are unarmed
okay.
in the vast majority of our locations. In some locations, we have armed security officers. And in some locations, we also have off-duty police officers that
okay.
work for us. For example, in Atlanta is one of those, and Chicago is the other one.
Okay.
So we have a mixture.
if an incident happens, I would assume at the location that has it, we go to the security guard, they step in and, you know, take control of the situation. But if the locations that do not have security guards, what do they do?
Well, if we can backtrack for just a second, when we determine that a location is not, you know, they don't have security, there's always a review process that'll allow for security to be added if there's something that happens. For example, we may get a request from a, you know, a city manager because of, you know, a lot of trespassing or the homeless population's expanded, of these things. And what we'll do is what's called a risk review. And then we'll look at the the location of the terminal. We'll look at the activities around that terminal. And we'll look at the crime rate around that terminal. And then we'll look at the incidents that have been experienced by that terminal in the last 6 to 10 months. And put all that together and say, yes, you do need hours. And these are how many hours you're going to get. So to your question, the vast majority of those locations have been risk reviewed, and we usually do those every other year. For example, this year we're doing it right now. So what we'll do is look at those risk reviews. And so predominantly to your question is I'm not trying to say that nothing ever happens at those locations that would require.
That'd be great, right?
It would be great. It'd be perfect. You know, that's the goal to get to. You know, that's the gold standard. But to your question, though, what we ask is our employees not to get so involved that they're putting themselves in a position either to be assaulted or to be hurt or injured. Leave it to the police. Stand back, call the local law enforcement, give an accurate assertion as to what's going on, and have the police come up and let them handle it. You know, because they don't have security. So it's them predominantly going to have to inject themselves. But again, what we want to do is educate the employees to understand at what point in time has something turned from a customer complaint or a non-escalation incident to the moment it does turn into an escalation incident. That's when we should back away from it, call the police, and let them handle it.
And you have an effective way for employees to be able to recognize that and handle that. We've talked a little bit about, if you could go over that with our listening audience. I call it PEOPLE, P-P-O-L, the acronym, but you know, if you'll break that down for us.
Well, you know, a lot of people have different perspectives on what to call it. I actually like this one. Some have it call it the assault prevention program. Some call it, you know, non-confrontational. You know, I just say it's the assault prevention, you know, but I do like the acronym that you just put out. One of the things that where this came into being was we saw over the past year or so an escalation in where our staff is being assaulted, whether it's by passengers or non-passengers. And one of the things, one of my duties, so to speak, is that I have to provide a monthly in-person report to our executive management. So it's not just a written report. It's actually I have to present the report to the executive staff here at corporate. And a couple months ago, one of the things that I identified on the security incident was the escalation. And during that that meeting, it became a priority. You know, executive management was very concerned that our employees were being put in situations and not really understanding or have the proper training to identify and try to prevent those incidents from occurring. So what we decided to do was put together a program and try to educate our staff how to be able to identify these indicators that would allow them to say, yes, this is escalating to a point where I may be threatened or injured. I need to back away so I don't get assaulted. One of the things that we're looking at when we do this, you know, assault prevention training is there's four categories, and we're starting off with positioning. Positioning means being where you place yourself in a room, in an area, a place of work, and that positioning also can mean how close in proximity to I am to a person that may be in a level of excitement or escalation. And what we're looking at is if we drill it down to the field, mm-hmm. and those activities occurring in the field, such as ticket counter individuals, our operations supervisors, our bus drivers, they have a lot of close proximity
right.
to our passengers. They right. have to be. So what we're trying to do is say, when you look at this, look at your positioning. Do we want to, when we're confronting or talking to folks, do we want to be standing face to face? Don't want to, you do not want to stand face to face to anybody. The reason being is if you look at a silhouette firearms target, that's face, that is straight on. That's the largest target. So what we kind of want to do is kind of put yourself as a smaller target, which is actually putting your strong side a little bit forward and inclined. So if your shoulder or your
so you stand like at
your
an
stance,
angle?
Yeah, at an angle, correct. Okay. It's your it's an angle stance. That means it allows you not to be such a target.
Okay.
The other thing is when you're standing in on an individual face on, that all your vulnerable parts of your body are exposed. Your face,
right.
Your nose, your eyes, your mouth, your throat, your chest, your knees, your groin area. All those are targets for an opportunity for somebody to, you know, if they want to assault you, to do a lot of damage. So what we want to do is slightly be at an angle to an individual so you're not putting those parts of your body, your vital organs, as a target.
Is that difficult to overcome? I mean, because as you're growing up, you're taught to stand straight, be eye to eye, you know.
It is. But if you actually, and one of the things that I observed, as I get to your question, I thought it would be very hard to teach somebody that, because who has not had any type of law enforcement experience, or who is not, a lot of people call that the shooter stance.
Okay.
You know, that may have not, who don't shoot, don't have any type of experience
right.
with that. Would it be extremely hard? What I found was, as I was doing the driver's class, that people naturally just get into that stance. They naturally do it without realizing they're actually doing it.
Okay.
So it was easy to actually kind of, you know, to teach it or further expand right. upon it. But that's one part of positioning, you know.
Okay.
And then what we're asking our folks to do is when they're in the field, make sure there's enough distance when you're positioning yourself with, with individuals. And again, we're not talking about the individual that's the passenger that's happy-go-lucky. There's, you know, you're not anticipating any problems. They're very nice and they're very polite to you. We're talking about situations where it's escalating.
Okay.
You know, to where it's going from maybe a customer complaint now to a level of aggression.
Okay.
Okay. So it's very easy to identify that.
Right, right.
So you want to put yourself in the positioning. And what we're asking, though, is in those type of situations, the average distance between two individuals should be about 3 feet.
Okay.
And you want to keep that distance. You know, a lot of people call it personal space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of people call it, you know, the distancing space. You know, I call it personal space. I don't want anybody within 3 feet of me. And there's a reason for that. If it does escalate to a possible assault upon a staff member, you want that distance to be able to react to what's coming.
Right.
If you're too close in, you won't be able to react, which means you don't have time to anticipate being assaulted.
Okay.
The average, the other thing is, the average assault is less than 2 feet. I mean, less than 3 feet.
Okay.
That means that person, that person is so close to you that they can literally touch you
right.
faster than you can react. So we want that distance, 3 feet.
So that you have to be conscious of, as the confrontation or conflict is escalating, to make sure you're at the proper distance.
Correct. Okay. You know, correct. And again, most people know that. One of the techniques that we used in the training class was to have myself stand in the middle of the room. And then what I would do is take another driver and put them in the room, and I would start to walk up on them.
Okay.
And then I would ask them, tell me at what point in time you starting to feeling uncomfortable, how close I get to you,
right.
and now you're uncomfortable. And what we found was, most people started feeling uncomfortable when I got to that 3 foot. They would
okay.
They would naturally react by putting their hand out.
Okay.
The average length from the shoulder to the tips of your fingers is 3 foot.
Okay.
So it's a natural instinct to do that.
Right.
But then again, the dynamics of a terminal, in a large terminal or a small terminal that has a lot of people, you know, catching buses or getting off buses and all the activity in the,
right.
inside the terminal, that distance may be at some times be kind of hard to get to. The other thing about you know, positioning is looking at those things that are surrounding you. You know, for example, you know, if you're a driver or if you're a ticket agent, look at where you're standing and what's around you. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of do that every day, right? You know, Eric, when we talk about safety,
right.
We talk about safety, we talk about slips, trips, and falls. We talk about removing those items that may cause you to trip, slip, yeah. or fall.
Right.
Remove those items so we don't have that issue. It's the same concept in positioning with security. You don't want all this stuff around you mm-hmm. that'll cause you to slip, trip, or fall, and then now you're more in a more vulnerable position
okay.
to be assaulted. The other thing is look at items that are around you and act as a natural barrier. For example, the ticket counter is a natural barrier. That's the reason why we have ticket counters or areas.
The employees on one side, customers
on the other. There's a, where's that? The average length, if you look
three
at it, is about 3 feet.
Okay.
Same thing when you're walking around inside the terminal. What you want to do is you want to look at these natural barriers that you may have in the terminal and make sure you're close to that. So that way you could have that distance to allow you to react. And the reaction we want you to do is to move away from the incident, not
okay.
engage in the incident.
Now tell us about posturing. I mean, you think about posturing, you think about sitting right, but this obviously is not talking about how we're sitting, right?
It kind of, sort of, in a sense. You know, what we're looking at when we talk about posturing mm-hmm. is how you carry yourself.
Okay.
And, you know, if you've ever been in the military, our employees who have been in the military, whatever branch of the military, you're going to hear a term, command presence.
Okay.
You know, are you exhibiting command presence? Mm-hmm. What posturing means is carry yourself with confidence. If you're perceived as an individual that comes in, let's say, to work, and when I was a captain back in the old days of officers, you know, if I saw an officer come in and his shirt was untucked and, you know, he's carrying his pistol belt on his shoulder and he's, you know, he's just slouching, that type of posture shows me and the people around him that he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's not observant to what's going on. He's just kind of going through the motions.
Right.
When we talk about posture, I want the employees that are interacting with our passengers to stand erect, mm-hmm. be confident in their delivery, know what they're talking about, remain respectful, mm-hmm. but yet firm. The reason why that posturing is so important is because people who are disruptive have a natural tendency to go to somebody who's weak.
Okay.
In presence, in mind, in emotion. It's kind of like a bully picking on a victim.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Who they perceive is the victim.
Okay.
What we don't want to do is put ourselves in a position of being viewed as the victim.
Okay.
We want to show, you know, strength of character. We want to show strength in knowledge of what we're doing and how we carry ourselves, erect, positive, confident. When you display those tendencies, most people will listen to what you're trying to explain. It actually brings down an escalation.
Okay.
It's when people perceive you to be non-committal, or you're not sure about what you're talking about, mm-hmm. or you're acting like you don't care that about their whatever situation is going on.
Right.
For passengers. Now, there's a whole different category for non-passengers.
Okay.
But the same application applies. You know, if you have a lot of what I call the nuisance behavior around the terminals, these are non-passengers but view our area as an open door do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those facilities that have a really strong staff that are very confident in their abilities, and when they're directing these people, no, sir, I'm sorry, you can't come in. You're not a Greyhound passenger. It's those terminals that have a kind of an iffy stance on it, you know, that they seem to be having the most problems.
So exhibiting confidence is very
Correct.
Important.
Confidence and character.
Okay. How about observing? Tell us about that.
That's a great one, too. And actually, you know, when we were looking at this, we were trying to figure out, or I was trying to figure out, in my opinion, what's the most important one?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what should I lead with first?
Right.
You know, so now this actually is kind of layered into it, but after reflection, observing and listening, in my opinion, are the probably the two most, you know, the most important ones.
Okay.
What I mean by observing is you know, one of the things that I have found in all the almost 6 years that I've been here is that there's a lot more individuals who have a lot more years than I do. And they have a natural instinct whether you call it instinct or osmosis, they've been around it enough, they can expect it. But they have this natural tendency to know, because of the dynamics of their terminal, what the issues are going to be, just because they've been there long enough to know.
Right.
What we're trying to teach, though, is on the observing factor, is to say, are there identifiers that people exhibit prior to getting on a bus that we may be able to say, that's a predictor, that's an indicator that there may be a problem 20 minutes down the road or 20 miles down the road.
Okay.
And some of those things could be like, for example, and drivers are really attuned to it. If you read the ADA reports, you know, the drivers are really attuned to it. They can tell when somebody's, for example, talking to themselves. Or they're they can smell alcohol in their breath. Their eyes are dilated.
Okay.
There's just something off with them. Drivers are really, really good. The where I see where observation techniques to come need to come more in play is with the terminal staff.
Okay.
Because there's this perception sometimes that if there's security guards in the terminal, it's that that's their responsibility.
You don't have to worry about
it. You don't have to worry about it, exactly. Or the driver's going to catch it before they get up to the...
But it's everybody's responsibility.
It's everybody's responsibility. Just as we preach that it's safety is everybody's responsibility,
right.
It's the same thing with security. So what I'm trying to do is to tell people, as they do their duties throughout the day in the terminal, to look at some of these indicators that would say, hey, look, this just doesn't seem right. If it, you know, if you see something, say something.
Right.
It rolls in. That's not just for terrorism. It's just for the everyday things. Well, while the expectation may be, this person just is not exhibiting, there's something there. I don't know what it is. The employee's not expected to go to that individual and say, what's the problem here? You know, and confront that individual. In terminals that have guards, we expect that person to communicate that information to the guard.
Okay.
And say, hey, you may want to go check this person. You may ask them for their ticket, ask them where they're going. Things of that nature, and that's what we teach the guards.
Okay.
You know, we teach them, or actually, we require the guard companies to teach their staff. They have about 24 to 36 hours of Greyhound specific training.
Okay,
that's not required by the state, in which they operate in. For those terminals, though, that don't have security guards, we ask those people to relay that information to the highest ranking Greyhound employee, whether it's the city manager or the operations supervisor.
Right.
So once I've done my due diligence and said, hey, look, this individual here, there's just something that's not right. You know, it could cause a problem. Once I tell the city manager or the operations supervisor or the security guard, I've done my part. I've done exactly what we've asked that employee to do.
So the more people that we have aware of things, the better off the terminal is, the better off the employees and the customers are who are traveling.
Correct. For example, in a lot of our locations, and a good example would be, in most of our locations, we only have one officer working, you know, per shift. Some locations have two, some even have three. Those are the larger terminals. So that's only one set of eyes. How many Greyhound employees are working inside that terminal? So I'm multiplying the factor by 3, 4, 5.
Right.
So the more people looking at these individuals and these things that are going on, and we can try to identify them, it's easier for the driver. You know, sometimes the case may be the driver's going to catch it. Or it could be the attitude is, well, the driver's responsible. The driver's standing there taking the ticket. He should be able to identify it. I have a little saying, I'd much rather deal with things at the front door than wait till it gets to the back door. And if you think about our business, the back door is the driver and the bus. The front door is the actual terminal. So we want to prevent these issues as they're happening or getting or starting at the terminal, rather than 50 or 60 miles down the road at 3 o'clock in the morning with a single driver.
Okay.
You know, that's the goal.
So that's with our eyes, but how about with our ears and the listening part? How does that play effect?
That's a good question. One of the things that it seems now on it, again, we need to kind of quantify the types of incidents.
Okay.
You have that are security incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I'm talking about is you have those passenger related incidents that fall in two categories.
Right.
Generally, the first category is a customer service issue that escalates to a security incident.
Okay.
For example, I'm coming up to you as the ticket agent, or I'm coming to you as the operations supervisor, and I'm trying to tell you my experience that I had on the bus. It broke down, the air conditioner wasn't working, it was extremely late, I missed my connection. Mm-hmm. And that could escalate depending on how our employees are reacting to that information. It could be a positive experience for the passenger. I'm very sorry that that happened.
Right.
Let me do what I can. Or if our employees act dismissive because that's just the way the business operates, mm-hmm. if that's projected to the passenger, it could cause an escalation.
Okay.
And that 9 times out of 10, that escalation is either going to result in one or two ways. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an escalation physically.
Okay.
Or an escalation of threats. Now we're in a security incident.
Okay.
The second type of incidents with passengers that occur, whether it's inside the terminal or on the bus, are those that you just cannot predict. You just can't predict them. I mean, there's no physical way to look at an individual. There's no observation techniques. And it mm-hmm. could be an individual that has mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At the start of the trip, they were fine.
Right.
Halfway through the trip, they start talking to themselves or displaying behaviors that are causing concern for other passengers or the driver. And then 2 hours further, it explodes.
Okay.
So there's really no way, or the one-off. A guy acts out on the bus and gave no indication for 6 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Those are the ones that you just cannot control.
There's no prediction.
There's no way to try to anticipate it. Those are the ones that just, you know, there's no way that you could do everything possible and it still turns into a security incident. The other type are non-passenger related. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the nuisance behavior around the terminals. You know, you're trespassing, you're loitering.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals that have nowhere else to go. It seems like, you know, their Greyhound is the place to be, where they hang out. All those negative behaviors. And that is just almost like a constant because they're going to be around the terminal. In a lot of cases, cities have, not purposely, but that population because of where our terminals are located.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that there's urban revitalization going along.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that here in Dallas.
Right.
It pushes them towards the center.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes we're the center. So you may see a lot more activity. Those, again, it falls into two categories. Those individuals that we constantly tell, or terminal staff or guards tell, you can't be here, you're trespassing.
Uh-huh.
And they move on. They don't give a problem. They move.
Right.
And those that escalated.
Okay.
So, you know, that's what those are the type of categories we have. Now, with respect to listening, what I'm trying to get at is those issues that are passenger related,
mm-hmm.
that start off predominantly as a customer service issue, and then it escalates. Right or wrong, whether it was our employee or it was their escalation, it still ended up into an escalation.
Okay.
What we're asking, though, is for people to listen. You know, one of the things that I did is, I worked two different types of law enforcement. I worked street level. I worked also with gang intelligence. Matter of fact, I was also a tactical commander. But I also spent a lot of my years in working in prisons as a warden. I retired as a prison warden. And even the most confrontational inmate in a prison just want to be heard before they act out.
Just want you to listen.
They just want you to listen. So what I'm trying to say is if we don't listen to what's being said by our passenger and that they may have a valid complaint,
mm-hmm.
even if they don't have the valid complaint, you can always listen and say, I'm sorry that happened. This is the decision that I made. And here's, if you disagree with it, here's the customer complaint line, here's this. These are avenues. But if we act dismissive mm-hmm. to the passenger and they feel as if in common language, blow it off.
Right.
They're now, you've put them in a position of saying, okay, now
mm-hmm.
I'm going to act out.
Okay.
So now we've kind of went away from what the actual issue was to an escalation of, I'm going to act out to get what I want. So what I'm trying to do is tell people, listen. And it's the same thing in the corporate environment, you know, as an employee. You know, one of the things, we all go through evaluations and these things. You should listen to your employees, even if they're wrong. It may find out you're wrong. So by listening to what the actual issue is, and that's the key to this, is to figure out what the actual issue is.
Right.
But most people, even if they're told no, if you give them the opportunity to say and you actually listen to what they're saying, not act like you're listening, but listening, they appreciate it even if the answer is no, because you gave them the opportunity to say what they had to say. Along with listening, though, is another part, which is it's a subcategory of eliminating distracting behaviors. Like, for example, you know, if I'm a pastor and I'm trying to communicate to you the issues that I had on my travel, and you're constantly looking at your phone. Are you listening to me?
You're not paying attention
to me, right? So all you're doing is conveying to me that whatever I'm trying to communicate to you is not important.
Right.
It's the same thing. If another employee comes up and you're in the middle of a conversation with this individual and you stop doing what you're doing to communicate with this person over here, that means you're telling the person or the passenger or the individual communicating the problem they're not important. If you're reading something as people are talking, does that show that you're listening?
No.
So what we want to do is, again, it's a layered effect.
Okay.
You want to eliminate distracting behaviors, listen to what the individuals have to say, effectively communicate the outcome or the directionally where they need to go.
Right.
And that's what most people want to, even if the answer is no.
And I think you may have mentioned this, but at what point should the employee bring in the security officer at their location?
You know, again, that's a great question, Eric, because a lot of times what I see when I read ADA reports and I read security incident reports is that, you know, there's always a definite time frame when our employee should have disengaged and had the officer engage.
Okay.
It's when that doesn't happen that we see negative outcomes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. One of the things that we, the reason why we have a security guard there or a security company in our terminals is for them to handle these situations. That's what we're paying them for. That's the expectation. So the question that you asked is very good, because how does our employee know? Again, I go back to, it's almost instinctive. Most of us know when we're feeling threatened, okay?
True.
There's certain behaviors, again, these indicators. You know, remember I was talking about, you know, your observation techniques and listening.
Uh-huh.
You know, listening, key words. You know, when profanity is interjected into the conversation, and there is an inflection in tone in the person's voice.
Right.
You know, we've gone from low and mellow to high and excited.
Right.
You know, the person is getting closer to me. He's starting to use profanity. There's threatening conduct, so to speak. You know, hands flaying about. Mm-hmm. That's probably a really good indicator that if I have a guard that, sir, I've communicated to our employee, should be sir or ma'am, I've communicated what I need to communicate by company policy.
Right.
Unfortunately, I can't help you anymore. You look at the guard and you ask the guard to step in, whether that's to escort the passenger or non-passenger out of the terminal and go back to doing your job.
Okay.
If it's a ticket counter or a customer service complaint that's being escalated, and now it's becoming, again, those indicators show that the person is not able to calm down. At that point in time, when you feel threatened, you should ask the guard to come in. Now, even if you have these indicators, and you haven't even engaged with the passenger yet, but you think that you may have a problem, bring the guard with you.
Okay.
Ask the guard to step over to you and just stand there quietly while you communicate, listen, do all your techniques. And if you start feeling threatened, give your answer and then let the guard handle it.
So in the situation where a location that doesn't have security guard, do you bring an extra employee with you?
I would have an extra employee. Again, you know, our goal is not for employees at locations that only have security officers to be security officers.
Right.
But there again, I would want somebody with me to, you know, again, watch, not I want to say, you know, in a sense, watch my back, but to be able to, if it does escalate out of control, to make that phone call to the police.
Okay.
Or to give that person who's giving me the problem the attitude of, there's more than just one person here.
What's your goal for our locations? How would you like for the locations to be?
You know, that's, again, you've asked a lot of great questions. You know, I do a lot of training with our regionals and our regional vice presidents and district or regional customer experience managers. And one of the analogies that I like to use is, you know, when I was for a lot of years, I was a prison warden. And the very first question people would ask is, how do you rate how safe your environment is? Uh-huh. And my answer was always, if I could allow my mother to walk from the front of the building mm-hmm. to the back of the building, back to the front without an officer escort, my facility is pretty safe. My goal is that every terminal manager looks at their terminal as the safest one, and they could let anybody's mother come up there mm-hmm. and be totally secure of the knowledge that within my terminal, they're going to be safe.
Okay.
I think if we look at that, because everybody's has a mother, everybody's has a sister,
True.
Everybody has somebody that they have, you know, very hard feelings of security about. You know, they just don't want anything to happen to them.
Right.
If I can make it as comfortable as that, to where we can reach that level of confidence within our employees and our passengers, then I think, you know, that's my goal.
As we close, what's one thing you want the employees, drivers, terminal staff to know when it comes to security and handling conflicts?
Always remember that their safety and security to themselves mm-hmm. is the priority. There's nothing more important than that. There's nothing, not a piece of equipment, not, you know, a piece of furniture, a broken window. There's nothing more important than their personal safety as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
And the other thing is being cognizant of complacency. Hmm. You know, a lot of these incidents happen, in a sense,
uh-huh.
because we get complacent about our own personal safety. We get complacent about what we're looking at. We get complacent of all, because, you know, think of it from an employee's perspective or a driver's perspective. In the course of a year, how many people do they physically interact with in our terminals or on our buses? Hundreds of thousands?
Oh, yeah.
Millions?
Definitely.
So it's quite easy when you're overwhelmed with that many number of people to get what?
Complacent. Right.
Because you're dealing with it every day.
Well, very good, David.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you talking with us today. We've talked a lot about security, and I'm sure there's much more we can talk about. So we'll have you on again in the future.
We can spend an entire year on it.
Well, we'll definitely get you back on for a future Bus Stop podcast to talk more about it. In the meantime, if you have questions that you'd like for David to answer, you can submit those to iamgreyhound@greyhound.com. Anything about security that you'd like to ask him, again, that's iamgreyhound@greyhound.com, and we'll make sure we forward those to David and have him respond to your questions that way. Again, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us for the podcast. And as always, everyone, remember, you are Greyhound, so be first, be safe, be stellar.